This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. A beautiful Monday. Sun is shining. Seahawks won. Game one in the book. 16 to go. Just makes you feel better about life. You just feel good when you wake up after a Seahawks win. We'll talk about it throughout the day. You guys can text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jacks text line throughout the show. John Clayton will join us as he does every day at 4. We've got the Pete Carroll press conference at 3 o'clock. So once the coach steps up to the podium, we will send you out there. Michael Bumpus will join us at 3:30. He'll join us every Monday. Now, Michael Bumpus, the host of the pregame, halftime, postgame show, will be joining us each week. And then Al Woods will be in our player spotlight today at 5 o'clock. So we've got a packed show, much to discuss. But, boy, it was good to – there's a sense of relief, Dave, not so much in that they won. I mean, I think we both picked them to win. But that there weren't really any hiccups. There was really – we kind of go through the good, the bad, the ugly of each game. I was having a hard time finding the bad and the ugly. It's I'll just say it right now in advance. It's nitpicking. It's really nitpicking because that was kind of a really complete performance. There weren't the – I was expecting some sort of maybe some stumbles on offense where they just look like, okay, they're not quite together. The starters didn't play together. They didn't have any time together. It's a timing thing. They'll get it. It'll be a slow start. No. Look, everybody looked like, yeah, this is what we've been doing for years.
Yeah, I think it was just watching Russell Wilson. I mean, again, let's go back to – after the L.A. Ram playoff loss, I've never seen him more discouraged or frustrated or angry. And you just saw he was happy. And this was – it just seemed like the offense, if you just – an overview of the offense, it made sense to him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there was a couple of times where the first, what, three passes, he had to scramble twice. One of which – and look, this is the thing. Tyler Lockett was wide open. Wide open, but, I mean, he had – three guys right in front of him. He was running to the sidelines. I mean, if he could have looked back across. So, I mean, look, you know, and Tyler was waving his hands desperately and everything. And so it got a little tense there because you're thinking, oh, man, you know, what's going on? There was a pretty good pass rush. They had a blitz that came along, and, you know, they didn't really pick it up well. He had to scramble. But then he found his way out of it every time, you know, whether it was a play where he scrambles, gets the first down. And then, you know, the ridiculous throw to Tyler Lockett, you know, where he has to do the what I called on the broadcast a bucket catch, Bob.
A bucket catch.
Yeah, I think it's known as a basket catch.
Ah. Yeah. Ah. Well, so, it could be a bucket. You lob it into the bucket, you know. you just created a new catch.
It's more popularly known as a basket catch. So, but yeah, I thought that, you know, it just seemed like everything made sense to him. And then you look at the end of the day, everybody's happy. Pete Carroll ran the ball 27 times. They threw it 23 times. They took deep shots, which they do. And Russ was 18 for 23, which is close to 80% completion. It's about 78%. So, you know, you look at Russ and, you know, not a lot of throws. And how many times where you see a really good performance by Russell Wilson and he's like 19 for 24 or 17 for 21 or something? I mean, it's just kind of his sweet spot. Meanwhile, he gets four touchdown passes. So yeah. I just thought it everything looked calm, and Russ looked like there was never any sort of desperation, I guess, would be the word I would use. That he looked calm and, you know, very confident in what he was doing out there. And that was, I think, the biggest question. I mean, it's by far in town. Shane Waldron, this new offense, after everything that happened last year, is it going to be the cure for and to bring out the best in your by far best player? Russ is the best player on this team, and it did, and it worked out so far anyway.
Yeah, I want to hear what this, because I was watching the broadcast with all due respect, so I didn't hear your guys' call on this. But that,
what's the matter with you, Bob?
That catch, Tyler Lockett just blows me away. He's the most understated superstar there is, and he is a superstar talent. He is just a ridiculous talent, and his ability to track the ball in the air and make adjustments to it, was on, if you ever doubted it, this play should have erased every doubt you've ever had.
Look like they're playing single coverage outside. Russell looking for the snap. He gets it. Here comes the blitz. Russ going to let it fly down the middle of the field. Lockett is there. He's got it. Touchdown. it. We love you, baby. Looks back over his shoulder and finds a beautiful rainbow pass from Russell Wilson against the blitz. A 23-yard touchdown strike, and the Seahawks go on top 6-3.
Now, that's a great call, but it doesn't even really tell you what happened. You had to see it because he did. It was over the shoulder. It was a rainbow. He did drop it in the bucket. But Tyler's looking over his left shoulder running. It's coming over his left shoulder, and then he just twists his head around. It's coming over his right shoulder. I mean, his ability to track that and make that adjustment and go from one side to the other side and still catch it over the shoulder, it was a phenomenal catch. It was just, I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding me with this.
Well, and every year we go, is that his best catch? Remember the one last year that hit him in the forearm?
Yeah.
And, you know, he talked about how much that hurt. The one the year before in 2019 where he had the toe tap against the Rams.
That still, I think, is maybe the greatest catch he's made.
Yeah. But, you know, this one, as far as difficulty goes, and you know, I thought of you, Bob, because we were out at T-Mobile Park, and we were watching the Mariners warm up, mm-hmm. and you were describing something that I didn't see, but you saw it. Ichiro was looking at a fly ball that was coming, and then he would turn his back to the fly ball and catch it blind.
Over his shoulder. Yep.
I feel like, and I thought of you, that you describing that because I think Tyler Lockett, it might have been like a blind catch. I mean, it'd be interesting to hear from him. I just feel like the angle that it came down at and the way he moved his head, I'm not sure he was seeing that football.
Yeah, you figure where he rotated, because if he was looking over one shoulder the whole time, okay, still a great catch, great throw. But he was looking over one and then adjusts, like spins to the other side to catch it.
Right.
You figure in that spin, somewhere in there with the helmet, the something had to block his vision for a moment at least.
Well, and that's the thing you have to remember. I mean, your helmet sticks out about 2 inches or an inch and a half probably from your forehead. So it's not like he's out there catching it, you know, like Ichiro was. I mean, I'm sure that he at least lost sight of it. Maybe at the end he was able to locate it. But, yeah, I think that's his best catch.
That was phenomenal. It was phenomenal. And then he comes up with another. Now, this wasn't so much just a great catch as it was a great route that he ran, and he was wide open, 69-yard bomb.
Second down and 20. Russ steps up in the pocket, and he's going to let fly deep downfield. Got a man open, Lockett. 10, 5, stumbles. He's in. Touchdown, Seahawks. On a second down and 20 after a sack, Russell Wilson rears back and lets it fly. 69-yard touchdown, Tyler Lockett, his second score of the day. Holy catfish, this offense is explosive.
Loud crowd there. There were a lot of the Seahawks fans were representing in that building.
I couldn't believe it.
I could hear on TV the you know, that chant. I could hear that out there.
That.
Oh, yeah, I love it in movie theaters especially. But it was cool to see that on TV. And then that play, I mean, Tyler ran such a great route. And then, boom, as he is wont to do, he's all of a sudden, there he is, wide open. He's got 2, 3, 4 yards of separation between him and a defensive back out of nowhere. And you're always just, you know, just by the camera work, you're looking at Russell, and all of a sudden you see why is he so open? What does he do that gets him so open? And we've asked him, and he doesn't really know. He's just like, I just do my thing.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm going to do a little thing on Football 101 tomorrow on that pattern. I was with Jordan Babineau last night doing the post-game show over at Q13, and he was saying, oh, that's that circle post route. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? So they were in cover 2, and so that means you get 2 deep safeties. And the deep safety to his side, he started to round it out to the right, his route, and that caused the safety to turn his hips and start to run with that, mm-hmm. and then he broke it back in like a circle.
To the left.
Yeah. And the guy's back was turned, and he was dead. He was done, and, you know, Jordan was saying that's a cover 2 beater. I mean, you got two – there's nobody on the other – I mean, there's a safety on the other side. You saw him come over later, but you get that guy's hips to turn, and you got him. And now all you need is a perfect pass from Russ, which Russ always looks like he's like. Do you ever used to play 3 flies up? Is that mm-hmm. did you or flies up or flyer or something like that? Where you know you got 3, 4, 5 kids and one guy chucks it up in the air real high, and whoever gets 3 then gets to go up and throw.
Oh,
yeah,
that's an old person game.
You're I've probably learned. Too busy doing karate
in the garage.
In the garage. Oh, but that's what that looked like. It looked like he just chucked it up there, but then all of a sudden you see it come down and hit him right in stride. And you go, wow. I mean, hitting That's like the space of like, it's like throwing it through a basketball hoop.
Yeah.
And the basketball hoop's moving. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about it. And so Russ throwing that deep ball. And, you know, we talked about during the preseason, and there was a couple of, you know, throws that Geno Smith missed just because, you know, they were deep throws one time because he was scrambling, but still. You
Russ
just get used
them.
To Russ making them that you, yep. He makes it look easy.
He really does. In that play, they made it look easy. The timing was perfect. As you said, hit him right in stride. Defender clipped his ankle at the last second, but Tyler stays upright, yeah. Finds his way into the end zone again. And then the defense is chipping in. And now the first drive, that's something I'd point out is maybe the bad or ugly if we go through good, bad, the ugly. First drive, they were on the field forever. 9 minutes, 19 seconds. They couldn't get off the field, but held him to a field goal. But within the whole game, the defense was really good and physical and aggressive. And you had a couple of sacks out there. Benson Mayo on 3rd and 8, coming up with a huge one.
Tight trips to the right side. Have run this formation before. Wentz looks that way. Now Wentz gets hit. Wentz goes down to the backfield. All the way back at the 5-yard line, Benson Mayoa. And for those of you that remember him fondly in number 95, he's now wearing number 10, and he looks like Fran Tarkenton when he comes flying in from the outside and sacks Carson Wentz in the backfield. Big play, and the Colts will punt from deep in their own end of the field.
Rebel and I were grumpy about the number 10.
Well, like, I was the same way. It was taking me a bit to figure out who was who. Like, oh, wait, number 8. Okay, that's Dunlap. Who's 10? Who's number 2?
And Rabel goes, when did he change to number 10? And I'm like, today, apparently. We're both grumpy about it. But, yeah, I figured that out finally. But, yeah, you saw, yeah, exactly. DJ Reed, which.
He's number 2 now, which was Witherspoon. Yeah. So
he was 29 before.
Yeah. It's going to take a bit to get used to everybody's number. But this might have been my favorite play of the game on defense. And that's. Maybe because we talked about this guy a lot last year, never seen him, had never seen him on the field other than college film. We talked about wouldn't know him if he were standing next to us. You know, is this going to be a bust? They moved up to take him. He didn't play the whole year. Darrell Taylor, who caught our eye absolutely in a big way during training camp. All right, this is his rookie season. He didn't play last year. So this is his first legit game. What's he going to do? And the guy was explosive. He was all over the place. And his sack, I loved it. It was violent. It was a clean hit, and it came on 4th down.
Wentz from the shotgun has a slot near side, takes the snap, has a second, looks, gets hit, goes down. Ball's going to go back over to the Seahawks. Darrell Taylor comes in from the right side of the offense, fights right through his man. Wentz never saw him. He got hit and decked, and another sack for the Seahawks. That's 3 on the game and couldn't come at a better time.
That was huge on 4th down.
I loved that. You know, when we were during the break, I was sitting there talking to Rabel. I was all excited about it. I was like, yeah, I made my shoulders go. Like, he gave him a little shake, and then he punched him. And then they come back, and he's sitting on the sidelines.
On
and
the
he
bench
was
talking to people.
And he did the little shake and the punch. And I'm like, man, this guy, he gets it. And the thing is, that is, according to Babineau, this guy, Braden Smith, the tackle he beat, and once again, this is a Jordan Babineau fact, and it came from Pro Football Focus, so you have to discount it a little bit. But he said that he did not give up a sack last year.
Really? Okay.
So, and you know, maybe they're right, maybe they're wrong. I don't know about that, but apparently he's a pretty good offensive lineman. Their offensive line was really good anyway. So, but, I mean, the power in that punch to deck that guy. And then the other thing was that he didn't stop his momentum. You would think you would kind of hesitate for a minute. He went right through him, right to Carson Wentz. So that was really impressive. And it just, you know, it just goes to show you that the technique – for defensive line. Saw the same thing from Rasheem Green on one of his sacks where he just batted the guy's hands off of him and just went right inside the hand play. And I see him always like grabbing guys' arms and trying to get them off of him, you know, because then once you get the guy turned, then you can get around him. But that was just a beautiful move and just his sense. I mean, that happens all in a split second. So like when you're, it's almost like a hitter at the plate. It's like you've got a pitch coming, you got to figure out what to do with it, and you got very little time. You know, how that guy sets up and how you recognize it, you know, and he quickly recognized once he gave him the little shake move that he was going to sit back and then attacks him with the punch, and this all happens like that.
Oh, it was such a great play. Such a great play. All right, I want to go through what I thought were the good, the bad, the ugly of this game. You tell me if I'm missing anything or you disagree. So in Now, the good, I could have gone on all day. I could have listed 8 million players. So this is not to discount what anybody else did, but just stand out. I mean, obviously, you start with Russell, 18 of 23, 254 yards and 4 touchdown passes. He was phenomenal. He was fantastic. Tyler Lockett, 5 targets, 4 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. We just got done singing his praises. Phenomenal. I love that the tight ends got involved early and they had an impact. It wasn't as if they were targeted a million. They were targeted a combined between Disley and Everett. They were targeted 5 times. They had 5 catches for 57 yards and a touchdown that went to Everett. I just love that we finally saw the tight ends get involved and seem to be something that was established enough to put it in the minds of the defense that, oh, man, okay, we got Metcalf, we got Lockett, now I got to worry about Everett, I got to worry about this. It just keeps that defense guessing, I guess, if you will.
Yeah.
I'd love seeing them involved early.
Couple of things. First of all, Everett had a illegal formation penalty callback, like a 20-yard catch that he had. So he would have had another target. The other thing is that, you know, when we talked about who's going to be the third receiver, I think it's going to be Will Disley. He was the third most targeted, you know, receiver. Disley was, and Carson also. And that's another one. I mean, a close second there, whether it's Carson or him, and or it could be Gerald Everett. One other thing about Gerald Everett, it's decided, in one game anyway, he can block. He is a good blocker, man. And there was a couple of times where he did, and he just latched on and would not let go. So, you know, I had my questions about that because, you know, he's more of a like a smaller tight end, but he's a tenacious blocker. I thought he did a really good job with that.
On the good part for defense, Rashim Green, I thought was fantastic. Just carried over what he had been in the preseason into this game. He was everywhere. He was explosive, came up with a couple of big plays. We'll talk to him tomorrow, by the way. He'll be in our player spotlight tomorrow. Darrell Taylor, we just talked about. I thought Jordan Brooks and Quandre Diggs were both just, they were everywhere. And Diggs is really physical, man. For a guy his size, he's very physical. Jamal Adams is just, same thing. He's out there blowing up plays in the backfield. He's everywhere. Again, we could just go on and on with this list of good. I mean, they weren't alone, but those were the ones that stood out to me. Did I miss anybody?
Yeah. How about – here's something they should change, because this happened to Delano Hill in Pittsburgh in 2019. He picked off a pass on a two-point conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't count. Carlos Dunlap gets a sack on the two-point conversion.
Doesn't count as a sack.
I don't think so.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's lame.
It is lame.
It was a great play by him.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, he was involved. So I mean, the entire D line I thought was a spotlight. You know, definitely they played really well, and you know it's too bad. Yeah, that didn't end up being a sack for him. But
yeah,
but you know, another guy I'd like to point out on the D line who played really well, Brian Monet.
Yeah,
inside. Yeah. I love that Jonathan Taylor. Those guys, those running backs. They're for real, but the one play where he picks him up off the ground and Taylor's
him.
His feet are going like in the air. It's like, okay, that's how you stop him.
It's like,
you know,
picking up a little kid.
Pick him up. Yeah, exactly. The kid's legs are still running.
But yeah.
Yeah.
All right. The bad, I touched on it. I mean, again, this is nitpicking. I'm giving you the heads up. I'm nitpicking a game that was really complete. The bad was the defense, the opening drive. It took them a while to find it. They couldn't get off. That drive lasted 9 minutes and 19 seconds for the Colts. Now, the beauty of that is it resulted in a field goal. So it was kind of a victory considering that they were kind of getting picked apart, moving down the field. They held them to a field goal. The other back, Chris Carson, fumbled. It was a great play by Leonard. I give him credit. They showed the replay where he just came up and punched the ball out. But Carson's had that problem before. You just don't want to see it.
Do you remember when it happened like that in Pittsburgh? It was T.J. Watt.
Vaguely, yeah.
It was 2019. I mean, it's on him, but when you look at him at that point, was he not securing the football? He was.
I said I was nitpicking, Dave.
No, I'm not arguing with you. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying for like people that are like going to go, oh, look at, you know, Carson fumbling again. But I mean, I think, and I'm making an excuse, I guess, for him is the reason why I'm qualifying it. But sometimes you just have to tip your hat.
You saw it was intentional. It wasn't him trying to tackle. Sometimes you see that where they're trying to grab an arm and they hit the ball. You saw him coming with the balled up fist, boom, landed right on it.
Well, and it's in slow motion, so it looks like that's exactly where he was aiming. I think he got lucky. I mean, a lot of times you hit the forearm, you hit the pad, whatever. He hit it just right in the sweet spot. So, you know, I guess at the end of the year, I'm going to put like an asterisk on that part, you know, as far as that being a fumble. Same thing that happened in Pittsburgh. So, yeah, you count it as a fumble, but still, that was just a really good play by him.
The other part of the bad, Russ was sacked three times, and I know one for a fact came from Posick. I think that there might have been a second one. Posick got trucked on one of them.
He did.
Then he ends up getting hurt. We'll see what happens with his knee. But, again, nitpicking, Posick not great in those particular moments. Now, the ugly, I put injuries to Penny Hart and D. Eskridge, both dealing with concussions. Hopefully they'll be okay, but you hate to see that. Rashad Penny.
I mean, frustrating.
What do I even say? Two carries, 8 yards, boom, he's out of the game. He's out of the game. And then L.J. Collier was a healthy scratch. That's your first-round pick. And I know he's bottom of the first round. You can throw whatever caveat you want. You're looking at a guy you picked in the first round and said, I don't think he helps us in this game. Let's not activate. He's not even active. That, to me, is a damning move. That says a lot. So that's what I've got for good, bad, and ugly.
Yeah, that part was surprising. To me, the ugliest part was the Penny thing, just because I feel like he's just never going to get going, you know, and that's the thing. He needs some momentum. He is on IR, so that is 3 weeks. So now we're not going to see him, and he's going to have another incomplete season. So it's really too bad. I thought another little bit of ugliness was that the reason why Dixon pulled that punt down is because a blue jersey flashed in a hurry. And they got lucky because Radigan, the kid out of Army, he got beat pretty soundly on the outside and quickly. And that thing was looking like it was going to get blocked. So, yeah, that was another thing that kind of bothered me, because when you get a punt blocked, and the Steelers know this, they blocked a punt against Buffalo, you win 90% of the time in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, let's take two.
All right, well, Dave kind of just hit what I was going to say. Rashad Penny injury news, re-aggravated his calf injury. So we'll just combine these. So that was one, and here's two. More injury news, tough injury news for the 49ers. Running back Raheem Mostert will miss 8 weeks with chipped knee cartilage. That does not sound pretty. And cornerback Jason Verrett will be out for the season after suffering a torn ACL.
Man, that was a team that just got destroyed by injury last year, and they are already off to a really, really rough start.
Well, as far as Mostert goes, it doesn't really matter, because they can just plug anybody in and they can get 100 yards. And that's kind of disturbing to me. Yeah, the whole NFC West bothered me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you saw the Niners and especially the Cardinals, man.
That was the surprise.
Yeah, but Mitchell got 104 yards yesterday for him. So that's, you know, but yeah, The other thing is, yeah, like you said, after going through what they went through last year as far as the injuries, and you get two guys down, and Mostert's a good player. I mean, the guy had two carries for 20 yards with a long of 11. But, you know, like I said, their running game is so good, they can just pretty much plug anybody in there.
All right, take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife, swedish.org/cyberknife-prostate. Coming up, the Seahawks' depth on defense led to some interesting rotations. We'll talk about that next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, the Pete Carroll press conference. As soon as Coach steps up to the podium, we will send you out to the VMAC, let you hear what he's got to say in light of last night's game. A little bit of news coming out of the college world quickly want to throw to you. Clay Helton has been fired as the head coach of the USC Trojans. That was quick.
That's what happens when you lose to Stanford.
I guess. Is it that bad to lose to Stanford? Is it that embarrassing that they go, oh, my goodness, we got to get the stink off of us. Start with him.
Well, it just makes you wonder, like, what's been going on? You know, or was there, like, a single incident that afterwards?
I guess.
Because, I mean, that's a pretty drastic move.
This early?
You're two games in?
I know some fans feel like it was too late, and some want to see that happen in other situations, other schools, but yeah. Man, that seems awfully knee-jerk. I'll be curious to see if there was more to it. But there's a little bit of news coming out of the college ranks. Meanwhile, a reminder that Mike Salk is back in the mornings each weekday, 6 to 10 a.m. You can hear from Brock Huer daily at 7:45 and 9:30, and John Clayton every day at 8:45. So tune into that. Taking a look at some of the snap breakdowns in this. Seahawks were in nickel defense for 62 of 76 snaps. Marquise Blair, 28 snaps. Ugo Amadi, 34 snaps. What do you think of that? Just, I mean, does that mean that, Pete didn't see what he wanted to see out of one of these two guys, so we're going to rotate them? Would it be better to have that is Marquise's job, or that's Ugo's job? Or do you like sort of splitting that?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, we'll get to it later, but we also saw my guy Cody Barton out there a little bit too. So, but I to me, it's Marquise Blair's job. I like what Ugo brings. I mean, he's definitely a good player, but as far as, again, I feel like they need to be a physical defense, and they need to hit people. And you're getting that out of Jordan Brooks. You know, you're getting it out of Daryl Taylor. Brian Monet, that play where he put Carson on his back and then landed on top of him, that looked like it hurt. So I feel like you need to be that way. So I'd like to see Blair more, and maybe we will. We'll see what happens. But he started off playing last year right away and was out there every time it was nickel. But, yeah, it was a ton of nickel snaps. And you see a couple of times they put Jordan Brooks up on the line. And so, and Bobby was kind of the only second-level linebacker there, and he had kind of a five-man front there. So, yeah, it was kind of a different look from what we've seen out of this defense in years past.
Now, we also saw the rotation at center before.
Hold on, though. Who do you want, Ugo or Marquise?
I like the physicality of Marquise. Ugo flashed to me during the preseason, though. I think he's a really good player.
Yeah.
I don't know, ultimately, is he better suited for that spot? I don't know. I'll trust Pete. I'll defer to them. He has stood out more, but we've seen him more because Marquise has been dealing with injury. But I think Marquise is a more physical player. Yeah. So, I don't. Tough. If I had to pick right now, I would say Ugo.
Well, it'd be interesting if, you know, they continue this kind of rotation as the season goes on. Maybe we'll, because I know, you know, defensive line is something that people rotate all the time.
Right.
You know, why not do linebackers? Why not do that with your safeties? And I feel like they're still kind of trying to figure it out.
Well, what about center? Do you rotate centers? Because that's what they were doing. They had Ethan, this is before he got injured. Ethan Posick was in there for 14 snaps. Now, Kyle Fuller was basically the guy. He was there for 40 snaps. But is that we're going to give Posick a chance here because he didn't lose the job. He was injured. He couldn't really compete for it. He's been our guy, so we're going to show some loyalty and give him an opportunity. I get rotating maybe the nickel cornerbacks, but when you're talking about a center, I can't imagine Russell would love that. It flies in the face of everything we ever hear about O-linemen, that if you can, you want those same five to always – work together because there's a cohesiveness and a chemistry that develops between them.
Remember they did that at guard and tackle last year? They would get Dwayne Brown out of the rotation a little bit. But, yeah, I agree with you. Center, you shouldn't be doing that. Hopefully this Dakota Shepley guy works out as well, because with Posick now, we'll see how long this lasts. But I thought him getting beat by DeForest Buckner was 100% because he didn't practice and wasn't ready for the preseason. He just, the speed of the game. I mean, look, Buckner's a great player and everything, but, you know, I felt like he was just way late on that.
Last one, and you brought it up. Cody Barton, 8 snaps. Daryl Taylor had 26 snaps, and Jordan Brooks, 68. What does that mean if you're Cody Barton? Is it just, hey, man, we're going to just try to find spots to fit him in, but he doesn't really have a set role, so to speak, here?
I think Jordan Brooks has to stay on the field. Taylor's just going to be part of, you know, the rotation as far as, you know, D-line as well. I mean, you can just line him up as a pass rusher. He doesn't have to be a linebacker. I wonder if, you know, look, last year, this is Bobby's 10th year. He played 100% of the snaps last year. I think he played 100% the other day yesterday. So I wonder if that's kind of, you know, getting into a little bit of rotation where maybe you will see Cody come in, you know, and have Cody and Jordan Brooks out there.
So give Bobby a breather.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would think in your 10th year, I just couldn't believe that when I saw that. It was 100% in every game, man. I mean, it was, you know, other than the Jet game and, you know, 9-10 years. I mean, you hardly ever, I mean, it's an amazing accomplishment by him, but staying healthy that entire time. But I just wonder if you might want to start giving him a break and maybe just, you know, rotating guys in. I like it. I like what they were doing. I like that they did that. I feel like it's not set in stone and that they're still kind of figuring things out. And maybe by the end of the year, a corner will either step up or, you know, maybe somebody step down. You know, maybe you'll see a linebacker, maybe a defensive lineman, and I feel like they're still kind of, you know, I think that makes people uneasy because it's not set in stone. But, you know, the season as it goes on, I mean, it starts and ends very differently.
Here's Pete Carroll just talking about the rotations they had, trying to get people in.
Cody deserved to be out there. And so, he had a fantastic preseason and all. And so you saw there's a lot of rotations today. There's a lot of things that were happening. Rotated the nickels also, and those guys deserve to play. So that's what we're working with.
I think that – I don't want to say that they're throwing Cody a bone because that means, like, you know, we're doing him a favor. Having him on the field is, you know, that's what you want. You want to get to that point. I think he's maybe getting a little discouraged, you know, and he was asked about this during camp. Like, you probably wanted to be a starter by year three. And he's like, yeah, I did. But, you know, I'm not thinking about that right now. I'm thinking about, yeah, great answer. But, you know, I think he's earned some playing time and they're giving it to him. And I think that's probably making him pretty happy. And he was really good on special teams. Him and Nick Ballore, also Penny Hart. You know, they had some good plays on special teams as well.
All right. Coming up, the best and the worst from a very wild weekend of sports is coming your way next. It's Wyman and Bob right here on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at the top of the hour, the head coach, Pete Carroll, will be holding his weekly press conference, so we will send you out there as soon as he steps up to the podium. Meanwhile, interesting weekend. The NFC West looked really good.
Ouch.
The Cardinals looked really good. What happened there, Lefko? How do you explain yourself?
I don't explain. What? It was terrible.
What happened? I'm watching. First of all, Chandler Jones is a man possessed. Five sacks in that game.
Believe that.
They shut down everybody. Nobody had a game. Derrick Henry had 58 yards. Julio Jones and A.J. Brown combined, I think they had one touchdown, a total of like 70-some yards combined.
Julio Jones' best play was unnecessary roughness. He shoved a guy after the play was over, and it forced the Titans to punt. That's the only thing he did of impact.
I mean, they got worked 38-13. So the Cardinals look great. The Saints... Jameis Winston throws five touchdown passes, and then you go to Aaron Rodgers, who looked like Jameis Winston should have. He was terrible.
That's what you expected from him.
I didn't expect Jameis to be that bad. I certainly didn't expect five touchdown passes, and more importantly, I didn't expect Rodgers to look the way he did, where he threw for 133 yards, two interceptions, no touchdowns. They were terrible.
Yeah.
They were horrific.
I was going to say, you know, we were talking about the Jerry DePoto moment where he could stand up and flip everybody off. I wonder if the GM in Cincinnati was saying that about Ja'Marr Chase, the guy they drafted with the fifth pick, because they were supposed to take Penei Sewell.
Yeah.
And it was instead, I think it was Joe Burrow's buddy from
LSU. Yeah.
Well, he had 101 yards and a touchdown. So,
yep.
I guess he proved himself.
And he was the guy who couldn't catch footballs.
Yeah.
He was the one talking about the pro football.
He figured it out.
Yeah, without the white stripe on the end of it, just threw him off.
Well, he saw it just fine.
Yeah, taking a look at some of these other teams, just in sports over the weekend, the Toronto Blue Jays were down three runs in the final inning. They score four in game one. They win. Had two innings, scoring 10-plus runs with the final three games versus the Orioles to take over first place in the AL wild card. All of a sudden, the Blue Jays have a spot. They've leapfrogged the Mariners. They are just rolling out there. So I guess we'll have to set our sights on the Red Sox and the Yankees and the A's because the Blue Jays are rolling. But and then you look at the Packers, 43 yards rushing. Rodgers only the second multi-interception game in a regular season since 2016. He hasn't thrown multiple picks in a game since 2016. Tells you how good he's been.
Well, and I heard Jake on the way in, and Jake and Stacy were talking about Aaron Rodgers hadn't thrown a red zone interception, and like I can't remember how far it goes back, but he's in between the last time he threw an interception, he's thrown 43 touchdowns. Mm. So yeah, it's been, you know, he throws that. He looked terrible. He looked really old at the end of that game, and just looked worn out. And yeah, that was a surprising. And if you would have said who, you know, one of those two quarterbacks, Bob, is going to have a really tough time and a really bad day, you would have said Jameis Winston.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. But he throws five TDs and Rodgers is on his back.
What do you think about this conspiracy theory that, of course, people have kind of jokingly, kind of not, saying that Aaron Rodgers is now sabotaging the Packers season? He has come back to ruin it.
I think it's dumb beyond belief. I think it's really dumb. Well, if you believe that, I feel sorry.
It's kind of
you.
Funny, though, right?
It is. What's funny about it is somebody will take that as fact.
Yeah.
Well, of course that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
It's obvious. Did you watch him? He's throwing in the towel.
You know who I'll bet will do that? The texters.
Of course.
Text it in, 710-710, if you think that. Yeah, and try getting a guy who's as competitive as he is to go out and purposely fail. Yeah,
embarrass himself nationally.
Right.
Sorry.
Yeah. He's got too big of an ego, I think,
yes.
for that.
Let's see. We talked about the Titans lowest yards per play of any team. Is that what that is? 3 point.
Of this weekend. So
3.9 yards per play. Tannehill
terrible
was sacked
offense.
Six times. I mean, Henry, who was just a monster, 17 carries for 58 yards.
Yeah,
Cardinals just owned that team.
That was just incredibly disturbing to me because I thought, oh, they're going to go down there and get punched in the mouth. Tennessee is a really physical team. And, you know, you look at even their receivers, A.J. Brown and Julio Jones and the battering ram that's Derrick Henry. You know, Tannehill's got his whole thing turned around. Their defense is physical. Man.
I don't know what happened. I hope they don't get it figured out until after this coming weekend. We don't need them angry and figuring things out. We need them a little complacent.
Well, it's kind of funny, you know, I think people say this a lot, that, and I've kind of pushed back. A little bit of this comes from Moyer, but, you know, the whole thing of, boy, you don't want to play that team now because they're angry. And I'm like, well, I was always angry, you know, going into a game. But also, you know.
Least surprising thing ever said. Yeah.
But listen, why would you not want to play a team that's struggling? I mean, obviously, they haven't gotten it figured out, and I don't think them getting angry and coming in here and, you know, what are they going to be, extra mean, extra peeved? I mean,
maybe
what
more
is that?
Focus to more attention to detail. I don't know what happened in this game. I didn't see it, so I don't know if they were just sloppy. They missed assignments. I mean, who knows what was going on in this game? But I would imagine there could be more focus.
Yeah.
That maybe wasn't there in the first game. Just.
Yeah, maybe
I don't know.
Yeah, sometimes coaches want like a bad practice so they can rail about it, you know.
Yeah.
And so maybe that would be that situation. But
well, they got something to rail about here.
Yeah, they do. But I mean, I'm just hoping that Arizona, they were really bad, and that Arizona, you know, is not really good. I mean, shoot, I would actually take a loss to the Titans over, you know, them, the Arizona Cardinals being that good, because you got to face them twice.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think, you know, you look at the NFC West, and that was the discouraging part over the weekend. Was that, you know, the Niners, Arizona, and the Rams. I was really hoping that we would see some weakness there. But now it wouldn't be a bad thing at all if you split with your NFC West opponents.
Yeah, I was going through looking at it going, all right, which was the most impressive of the wins? And I eliminate two based on opponents. The Bears, Bears aren't very good. So I'm going to eliminate that. The Lions, come on. 49ers, yeah, you scored points. Congratulations.
Yeah.
It's the Lions. So it was a battle between the Seahawks and the Cardinals for most impressive win in the NFC West. I have to give it to the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I mean, they dominated. They dominated. Listen, the Colts are a playoff team from last year. That was a very good quality win for the Seahawks. But the Cardinals went out there and smashed a team that it looks like they are loaded. So we'll see. We'll see what they look like next weekend. But that was impressive. And then the last item as far as sports over the weekend, I tried two different times to watch this game, Dave, and I fell asleep both times. The Huskies losing to Michigan. It was so boring. It was so – this offense, I don't know what – they're running an offense from 1973. I'm not sure what's happening here. But 31-10, didn't score until a field goal with 6 minutes left in the third quarter. I mean, it was just – blech.
Well, I thought that they were going to be competitive. I thought, you know – that they were going to bounce back a little bit and maybe make El Hombre a little bit cranky on Tuesday when we talked to him. But, you know, it's too bad because it was a good day seemingly for the Pac-12 because, you know, started off with Oregon going into
Ohio State.
That was really a good game to watch. And then I watched Brock's game, which was Colorado with Texas A&M. And they had a chance to win that game. Their defense looks really good. And it was always fun, you know, listening to Brock. And, yeah, they end up losing there. But, yeah, I was hoping that Washington would have a little bit better showing there.
Yeah, not impressive. Not impressive. All right, what did Pete Carroll think of the big win? We'll get some updates from him, maybe some injury updates as well. All of that coming up when he steps up to the podium. We will send you out there next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.